that Native communities have a meaningful and substantive role in their management.
Interior Secretary Sally Jewell speaks to Alaska Natives from the Alaska Public Radio Network. This is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 21st. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a hard-fought campaign could be a bellwether for the coming election.
Probably the premier race that's going on.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Interior Secretary Sally Jewell addressed AFN today. Jewell announced a new secretarial order that says the department will include Alaska Native communities and traditional ecological knowledge in land management decisions.
I'm announcing today a new secretarial order that encourages collaborative agreements between the Interior Department's land managers and federally recognized tribes. The purpose is to provide guidance to our nation's public land and water managers to make sure that when we share resources with a special geographical, historical, and/or cultural connection with tribes, that Native communities have a meaningful and substantive role in their management.
Earlier in her talk, Jewell reviewed gains made in recent years which have brought federal managers and tribal leaders closer together in collaboration on resource issues, specifically pointing to working toward greater tribal engagement in subsistence issues. She cited an example of federal managers working with tribes in the Otna region on solutions for hunting pressure on moose. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan also spoke at AFN this afternoon about improving water and sewer access in rural Alaska and about helping Alaska Native veterans. Sullivan said that he is working to raise awareness in Congress about the more than 30 villages that still don't have running water or sewers. The federal government will give $1.4 billion nationwide to build new systems, but Sullivan says they need to start putting the money to work.
The bottom line is we have to get our federal agencies to stop studying these issues and start helping us build these important infrastructure projects. They're going to help our communities.
Sullivan is also working on a bill addressing military veterans who missed the opportunity to apply for Native allotments because they were on active duty. The bill would give the veterans and their families the chance to apply now. Alaska's first joint state-tribal wellness court is official. A memorandum of understanding between the state and the Kenaitse Indian tribe establishing the court in Kenai was signed at a ceremony at the state courthouse in Fairbanks on Thursday. Kenai Superior Court Judge Anna Moran says the government-to-government agreement follows years of preparation by the Kenaitse tribe and the state.
It's the first time that a state court and a tribal court have worked collaboratively, and so we're both going to be sitting on the bench in each and every case, working together for solutions for our community, particularly surrounding issues of substance abuse.
Moran says the U.S. Department of Justice provided training and technical assistance for the project. Just a few similar courts exist across the country, but early statistics indicate they reduce repeat offenses. She's a nurse and he likes to fly fish. They both brag about their grandkids and they're running against each other in what's been called the nastiest election in Alaska this cycle. The Anchorage race between Republican Kathy Geisel and Independent Vince Beltrami could help determine the balance of power in the state Senate and how Alaska takes on its fiscal crisis. Elizabeth Harbaugh with Alaska's Energy Desk has more.
One of the legislature's most powerful Republicans is out knocking doors in East Anchorage.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Kathy Geisel.
Geisel, who is 64, has been in the legislature since 2011. She's a staunch oil industry supporter and chairs the Senate Resources Committee. If reelected, she and her colleagues will face some hard choices to square away Alaska's finances on issues like spending cuts, oil taxes, and whether to institute an income or a sales tax. But as Giesel chats up voters, there's one thing she'd like to set straight.
What the Senate majority, which has been controlled by Republicans for the last 4 years, has done is actually in those 4 years, we've brought state spending down.
This election, Giesel is battling attacks, claiming the legislature didn't do enough to solve the state's budget shortfall. Here's an ad paid for by Together for Alaska, a political group backing her opponent.
Giesel and her do-nothing legislature have sat on their hands, despite being called back into session more times than any legislature in our history.
Giesel argues the legislature has acted, but she acknowledges the problem isn't solved.
I understand the frustration. I also understand when they say to me, there's more to be done. I agree.
While knocking doors, Giesel asks voters if they prefer a sales tax or an income tax, proposals that once might have been political suicide. She says she'd consider backing either with enough evidence. But she adds getting to a long-term solution will involve some complicated math.
11, 21, and 1. To pass anything, to get any policy changes or new policies, takes 11 senators, 21 representatives, and 1 governor.
Her challenger, independent Vince Beltrami, says if voters subtract Giesel and add him instead, the legislature can fix the budget. Beltrami is 54 and has been president of the AFL-CIO, the state's top labor organization, since 2006. It's his first run for office, but he's been involved in state politics for years. Like Giesel, Beltrami is out knocking doors. I asked him how far he's walked.
Yeah, I can tell you exactly because I have a Fitbit thing.
So far, he's logged over 500 miles, another 150 or so, and Beltrami estimates he will have walked to Juneau. But he still has a steep climb. He was a registered Democrat until he switched to an independent in 2014. A big part of his district is conservative and home to many oil executives. Scroll down Giesel's campaign contributor list and you'll see names like Hillcorp, Kalis Energy, and ConocoPhillips. Beltrami says he's pro-development too. He's for drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, for example. But when oil taxes come up again, Beltrami says,
I think one of the fundamental differences is I'm going to be a little more discerning. I'm going to ask harder questions because we have a constitutional obligation to make sure that we get the best value for our resources that we can.
Giesel may have more oil industry supporters, but Beltrami has his own loyal following. Look at his list of contributors, UA Local 375, Laborers Local 942, IBEW Local 1547. Union support helped Beltrami raise more money than his opponent between August and October, almost catching up to Giesel's war chest. And that has Republicans worried.
Strike one!
Beltrami has batted well this year, and if he can fill the bases, public unions will control the state legislature.
That ad was paid for by conservative political group The Truth Alaska. Republicans argue Beltrami will put union interests ahead of his constituents. Beltrami disagrees, of course, saying he'd take time off as AFL-CIO president while the legislature is in session, although he won't step down.
People will always say, you know, you're a union guy, so you're going to look out for the unions. Well, we have oil guys that are looking out for oil.
This is kind of ground zero in the battles that we're having in Alaska.
That's conservative commentator Casey Reynolds, editor of the political blog The Midnight Sun. He's watching the race closely.
I would say it's probably the premier race that's going on.
That's because Democrats need just a few wins, and they could cobble together a coalition with moderate Republicans to take control of the state Senate. That means this race in East Anchorage could determine how Alaska as a whole addresses its budget woes. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a St. Paul student returns home to teach.
Even if I didn't know all the answers, I mean, I answered them to the best of what I know.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. As an Alaskan, you love your salmon. But do you know the things you can do every day to make sure they're here for your children's children? Well, find out what you can do to ensure healthy runs for future generations of Alaskans at salmonproject.org/20ways. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
A Bethel drug bust has netted seven adults in a raid conducted by the statewide drug enforcement unit and Bethel police. 47 grams of heroin, a half pound of crack cocaine, and $64,000 cash was seized from a private residence in Bethel on Thursday. According to a dispatch from Alaska State Troopers, charges have been filed against Eric Kinnegock, 34, Anthony Washington Sr., 57, and Anthony Washington Jr., 30, and Melissa Beans, 36. All of Bethel. Two California men, Shawane Jenkins, 34, and Ryan Daniels, 39, were also arrested. Albert Cleveland, age 30, of Quinnahawk, was also taken in on parole violation charges. Meanwhile, Big Tobacco is standing trial in Bethel's court. Dolores Hunter of Marshall and her two children are suing cigarette and tobacco company Philip Morris USA and its parent company Altria Group for product liability, fraud, and the wrongful death of their family member, Dolores' common-law husband, Benjamin Francis of Pilot Station. Francis died in 2004 of lung cancer after a long history of cigarette smoking. The civil jury trial began Wednesday at the Bethel court. House and is expected to stretch over the coming month. Don Burmeister with the firm Friedman & Rubin from Washington is representing the plaintiff. Burmeister is arguing that Francis died from lung cancer caused by a tobacco industry conspiracy, a conspiracy Philip Morris participated in to mislead the American public on the harmful effects of cigarettes. Stan Davis of his own firm in Kansas is representing the defense and arguing Francis knew the harmful effects of smoking and chose to continue the behavior under personal responsibility. This is the second time the case has gone to trial. The initial trial occurred in 2011. Judge Eric Smith, who's hearing the case in Bethel, ordered a retrial after the case went to the Alaska Supreme Court last year. The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska wrote to the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly this week warning that a new invocation policy is unconstitutional. The policy approved on October 11th restricts who is allowed to give an invocation that begins each borough assembly meeting. ACLU Alaska Executive Director Joshua Decker says people who wish to give the invocation must now pass a religion test. Decker says the test is unconstitutional because the borough's invocation policy violates constitutional rights of equal protection and religious freedom.
What the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly did is set part five discrete requirements that someone has to pass before they're allowed to give an invocation. They have to be an appointed representative of a religious association that has an established presence in the Kenai Peninsula Borough that regularly meets for the primary purpose of sharing a religious perspective.
Decker says these requirements clearly prevent some groups of people from giving the meeting invocation.
This discriminates against people who, for example, may be members of a church, but their church meets outside Kenai. It discriminates against people who may belong to a church, but it does not regularly meet at all. And it discriminates against people who may not belong to a church, period.
Decker says the assembly has three options, either return to the old policy of allowing anyone to give the invocation or eliminate invocations completely or face an ACLU lawsuit. Due to the legal nature of the issue, borough assembly members are not allowed to comment unless the matter is officially raised at an assembly meeting. Juneau police found an explosive inside an impounded car being prepared for auction. Police spokeswoman Erin Kalwara says a disposal team destroyed the explosive on Tuesday.
We're not sure exactly who the property in the vehicle belonged to, but there doesn't appear to be any nefarious attempts or anything of significance we need to be concerned about with that particular device.
She says the device consisted of a seal bomb and other homemade explosive materials. Kalwara would not disclose who owned the impounded car. The Pribilof Islands in the Bering Sea are a magnet for scientists who come to study everything from fur seals to migratory birds. When they leave, that research often leaves with them. But for the last 9 years, the local tribe has found a way to bring it back home. Each fall, a group of scientists return, not to do research, but to share their findings with the students of St. Paul and St. George Islands. And for the first time this year, a former student is now a teacher. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has more.
19-year-old Dallas Roberts is in St. Paul's greenhouse.
It's a couple of rooms in the basement of the island's grocery store, lined with trays of plants under bright red and blue lights. He's surrounded by a gaggle of second and third graders.
See, look, we put the little cute little seeds in here, and then we put them in here, and we put water in here.
Roberts is teaching them how a greenhouse works. It's part of Bearing Sea Days. Since 2008, the Pribilof School District has blown out a week of classes to focus on science from the region. Roberts grew up in St. Paul. He graduated from the high school last year, and he has fond memories of going through Bearing Sea Days as a student.
I thought it was a blast throughout my whole high school career. I think we're all excited to get out of schoolwork and stuff for a week.
Roberts has worked for the local tribe, the Aleut community of St. Paul Island, since high school. After a year of college, he decided to come back.
I don't see myself doing anything different right now. Greenhouse is like a part of me right now that I can't just easily give up.
That's what Aquilina Lestenkoff likes to hear. Lestenkoff helped create the program. She hoped to get more kids interested in working in environmental fields on behalf of the community. Creating teachers like Roberts is ultimately her biggest goal.
When you build people that can speak about environment, that's one thing. When you build people that can teach about the environment, that's a whole other ballgame.
As a teacher, Roberts joins scientists from across the country. Program organizer Lauren Devine says it exposes kids to things they would never learn in a traditional classroom, like rearticulating baby orca skeletons or the chemistry of sea ice, connecting students to their changing environment.
Even though they're in a region where they can see climate change happening, it's not something that maybe they would be exposed to in a traditional science setting.
The goal is to make sure that some of the research happening in the Pribilofs is shared with the people who live there, maybe even inspiring the next generation of scientists. When Roberts decided to come back to the community, he worked out a deal with Devine. If he took online classes, he could work for the tribe's environmental conservation office. He says Bearing Sea Days applies science to daily island life, like the annual fur seal harvest.
I grew up doing the seal harvest, so I think it's good for our community to know what the seals eat, how certain climates affect them, because right now they're declining, and I think that hurts us.
He never imagined he'd be back as a teacher, but now that's his favorite part.
It was amazing to teach younger kids about the greenhouse. Even if I didn't know all the answers, I answered them to the best of what I know.
And he's keeping an eye out for students who might follow in his footsteps and become teachers themselves. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in St. Paul.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Alaska has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, but together we can change that one life at a time. The statewide Suicide Prevention Council has the resources and training to prevent suicide and support healing for individuals in need. Be the one to ask if someone is thinking about suicide and connect them to help. Visit StopSuicideAlaska.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, crafting career. People have come to Fairbanks from all over the state to sell their handmade goods during the Alaska Federation of Native Conference this week. At the craft fair, you can find everything from ivory carvings and handmade masks to mukluks, cuspucks, and even kippered salmon. As Emily Schwing reports, with unemployment around 75% in remote villages, these handicrafts and foods are one of the few ways rural Alaskans can pay their bills.
The annual Alaska Federation of Natives Convention is well known for its crafts fair. Edna Deacon is from Grayling. She came to Fairbanks to help her daughter sell handmade drums, small carved figurines, and other trinkets. but she specializes in handmade birch bark baskets. She learned the craft from her father.
Long time ago when I was a little girl, he used to bring me out for berries. And one time we didn't have nothing to pick berries and only our teak, our cups. So he told me we're going to make a birch bark basket. I'm going to teach you how, he told me.
Decades later, Deacon sells her baskets for anywhere between $40 and $250. She uses the money to pay for heating fuel.
But I'll have to save half of it for the food, too.
For food?
For food, yes.
Well, so what kind of food?
Like essential, like flour, beans, rice.
Deacon's earnings keep her afloat in Grayling, where the cost of living is well above the national average. That's a worry for Sitka-based Yupik artist Peter Williams. He says he's not sure his elders can really make ends meet in a setting like this.
Like craft fairs, I think that's really tough to get a living wage. Like look at elders and what they're selling their prices for and just kind of like what their material costs are, what their costs are to get there to the craft fair, what the booth fair craft fairs are, and it's like, I don't even know if they're covering their booth fair.
A booth at AFN's craft fair costs about $300. For Williams, that fee is manageable. He hunts seal and sea otters himself and works the fur into high-end fashion. He recently showed his work on a runway in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, I showed seal and sea otter and combinations of seal and sea otter pencil skirt, vests, a combination of seal and sea otter vests, sea otter and seal mittens.
Do you mind if I ask, how much does a seal skin pencil skirt go for?
$1,500.
$1,500?
Yeah.
Okay. And then like a pair of mittens?
$800, yeah.
Do they pay the bills?
Those don't pay the bills.
With a price tag like $1,500, how come that doesn't pay the bills?
Because I'm not selling enough.
It's tough to make money at the craft fair and even outside, where tables line the sidewalk in front of the doors of the Carlson Center. That's where the convention takes place. Laura Stepanoff has stacked her table high with Ziploc bags stuffed with hand-processed salmon. They sell for $20 each.
We got smoked kings and smoked reds, $20. Mm-hmm. And I got salmon berry jam and pickled fish and kippered fish.
Stepanoff is from Chignik Bay. She's saving a little money on a booth fee by setting up outside, but she's also spent the week fighting high wind, glaring sun, and falling snow. Even so, on her first day, Stepanoff pulled in $2,000, almost enough to cover her annual $2,500 electricity bill at home. As the conference picks up, she could bring in between $3,000 and $4,000, but money isn't the only reason she's here.
We come here early because of the elders.
Okay.
You know, they're happy to see us. They're, you know, and it's just nice to see them and visit with them.
AFN is the largest annual gathering of Alaska Native people in the state. It's a cultural celebration and a time to visit with friends and family. Elder Anna Frank grew up in Minto. These days, she's a well-known religious leader in Fairbanks. When AFN rolls around, she lays out her hand-beaded hair barrettes, fur slippers, and hand-sewn beaver hats next to a giant pan stacked high with homemade fry bread, $2 each.
If I make good on my table, I probably could take a vacation to Seattle or something. Maybe go to the Mariners game or Seahawks or something. That would be my vacation.
Frank doesn't rely on her handicrafts as a reliable source of income, but she won't stop making them.
It's to pass on our tradition, our customs, and the way we live.
That's Edna Deacon's goal, too, but it's hard in a village like Grayling. She taught her grandson how to make baskets, but she's afraid his need for cash outweighs his desire to carry on a traditional way of life.
He works in a... He goes out in the sea and go fishing. You have no time to make baskets.
For AK, I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Josh Lynch in Fairbanks. Originally from Texas, Lynch is now experiencing his first snowy winter.
I feel like I have
what any person from the South would consider a moderate exposure to snow, I guess. I can remember maybe a day every 2 or 3 years where school would be canceled on account of snow. But of course, in Arkansas, school gets canceled on account of an inch, maybe an inch and a half's worth of snow, and often that's gone by lunchtime. The last 5 or 6 years, I spend 3 or 4 months traveling around in Alaska every year, but only during the summer when I can sleep in my tent and it's not so scary outside. I'm pretty nervous about being in a place that's cold and dark and snowy for the first time ever. I've tried to do all the things that you can sort of do to be prepared, I suppose. Firewood, extra jackets, blankets. I've got all my friends coaching me with advice on how best to survive and stay active. A light North Face flannel, a light North Face half zip is a winter jacket in Texas, and you're lucky if you get to wear it 2 days a year. So moving into cold weather gear is totally foreign to me. I don't have the first idea of how to begin to shop for this kind of stuff. So anytime that I'm looking at any sort of item at all, I have 4 or 5 different people I turn to opinions for, people who I trust don't want to see me turn into a popsicle. Now you make a good point in that if there was anything worse than it being incredibly cold and incredibly dark and snowy, it might just be incredibly cold and incredibly dark. That's something I'm not quite prepared for mentally yet either, as I sort of imagine Alaskan winters. It's that snowy white, you know, on top of the spruce trees, up on the top of your cabin, you know, the whole 9 yards. But if there's not any snow, I'm not sure that I'll be able to handle it too well, emotionally anyway.
Josh Lynch lives in Fairbanks. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Schwing and Zoe Sobel. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Jeremy Shea in Juneau, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Ann Hillman and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Shayla Farzon in Kenai, and Zoe Sobel in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future. And by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.